The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Hey guys, today's show is brought to you by Heshy Socks. The holiday season is here, and so are the new season of Heshy Socks. The brand new products are available for purchase right now on their website. Heshy has added invisible liner socks with cushioned soles and non-slip gel inserts. These are the most comfortable socks you will ever wear in your life. They've added more ankle socks, more fashion and colors, more basics, and they're just And they've just released a collection from Bassmaster world champion Mike Iaconelli. I promise you, you will not find a more comfortable sock for work shoes, boots, or sneakers. Any friend of the podcast who's purchased these socks can attest to their greatness. I wear them all the time. For those of you who are new to the podcast and haven't gotten a pair yet, what are you waiting for? If you're tired of your feet hurting in your shoes after a long day of work, go to HeshySocks.com. They will solve this problem for you. Most socks are expensive. They're poorly constructed. They provide zero protection. Not Heshy Socks. For under $10 a pair with our promo code, all Heshy Socks are cushioned in the heel, foot, and toe. All have arch support in the center so your feet don't slosh around in your shoes. All have antimicrobial properties so your feet don't stink. And best of all, they're all designed to stay up so you don't have to tug up at your socks all day long. So whether you need socks for yourself, your secret Santa, your stocking stuffers, or just for a kick-ass life, go to HeshySocks.com. That's HeshySocks.com. Enter the promo code PROBLEM30 for 30% off your entire order. HeshySocks.com, heaven for your feet. All right, let's start the show.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now.
Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. It is your favorite part of the quarantine. The crossover continues. I am here with Michael, the machine, Malice. How are you, sir?
I am doing great, and I am going to change my mic.
This mic doesn't do it automatically. Okay, now it's changed.
Now it's changed. Much better.
Mic on the mic.
All right, so I just want to say up top, before we start today's show, just briefly wanted to say I was very saddened to hear about the passing of Walter Williams this morning, who is truly like a hero to me, had a huge impact on me, brilliant, brilliant thinker, an economist, also really, if not technically, but truly a historian, and was, in effect, at least taught me a lot about history. And one of the just most genuine, brave people I ever read or listened to. And it was cool seeing how many people were like posting about it and stuff and how many people he touched and affected. So anyway, rest in peace to Walter Williams. He's the reason a whole lot of people are red-pilled today. So,
and he's also was a very amiable and had a very positive kind of affect about him and was friendly, which a lot of people liked.
He was friendly, but also viciously unapologetic.
Yeah.
And
like
would
Tom.
Just, you know, Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I love that. It's a great quality to have. We could all learn a lot from him. And he's also like, he's the reason Eric July is a libertarian. And he's the reason like a lot of really, you know, influential people found the light. So anyway, what I wanted to talk to you about today was pills, because we always talk pills on this show. Oxycontin after a few whiskeys.
Ooh, Oxycontin? Did you say Oxycontin? You're such a dad now. You don't even know how to say it.
Isn't that it?
It's Oxycontin.
That's what I said.
I thought you said Oxycontin.
All right, I said it wrong. Anyway.
You start the show talking about Walter Williams and go straight to cotton. I see how it works with you people. with the you people.
All right, well, I didn't want to talk about Oxycontin. I wanted to talk about the red pill versus the blue pill to start off with. This is something I've been thinking about lately, and I saw this. Someone made a YouTube video that was really great, and I feel bad because I can't give them credit because I watched it. You know, like I watched it on my phone in on a train, and I watched it. You know, like when you're in Twitter and you click on a YouTube video, so then it's not in your history. And I was like, oh shit. And it was in some thread somewhere, so I couldn't find it again. But this guy, you probably know who you are if you're listening. He made this great video about blue-pilled versus red-pilled libertarians and what the difference between them is.
I'm in pain hearing. I'm sure the video is excellent, but just hearing it, you're going to be like nails on a chalkboard with the blue-pilled perspective.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But, no, I know. But it was a really great video. It featured you in it. And, it had this part of this clip that I thought was so interesting. I'll get to that in a second. But the basic idea, right, and I know you've talked about this a lot, but the idea, the red pill comes from The Matrix, right? Which is a really, I think, fucking brilliant movie. It was kind of an awful, like it was a dumb movie and a brilliant movie all in one. But some of the points that it makes are really, really profound. And the idea of the red pill in the movie is basically that you can choose knowledge or to remain in the darkness. Someone kind of has to offer you this choice, but you can choose to take the red pill. And what the red pill will reveal to you is that everything is bullshit. Everything is this whole thing, everything you perceive to be reality is bullshit, and it's bullshit to enslave you. It's not bullshit to help you. This is bullshit to enslave you. And the idea of the red pill, as we talk about it, is the idea of realizing that the entire meta narrative that is constructed around you is bullshit, and it's bullshit to enslave you. It's not bullshit to help you. It's bullshit to keep other people in power, to your disadvantage. And that's kind of more or less the idea of it. Is that fair?
I just tried to look up his video. I couldn't find it, so I apologize for the guy. I thought we could give him a shout out. So number one. Number two is the way I define it in my book is that to red pill someone is to demonstrate that what is presented as fact by the corporate press and entertainment industries is only a shadow of what is real, and that this supposed reality is in fact a carefully constructed narrative intentionally designed to keep some very unpleasant people in power and to keep everyone else tame and submissive. So I think the intentionality, which you obviously mentioned, is very key, because I think like boomer cons, who are like the bane of my existence, they pat themselves on the back on Twitter by being like, oh my gosh, these journalists are so stupid. How could they be making these stupid mistakes? And it's like, you are so removed from what is going on here that the light from where you are will take a trillion years to reach the earth.
Yeah.
It's complete. And then they laugh. And here's the thing, like, here's the exchange, right? It's like, hey, here's the deal. You get to call me stupid, and I get to be Stalin. Who's winning here? Like, I will control every aspect of your life. I will train your children to hate and despise you and sacrifice you to me. But on the other hand, you get to call me dumb on Twitter. So I guess you got me.
Yeah. So there was one, I saw Bob Murphy give a speech. This is over a decade ago. It was like the first time I ever saw him. I think the first time I ever met him in person. And he gave a speech, and the way he said it, which was really getting at the same thing. Forgive me if I don't get this exactly right. It was over a decade ago. But he basically said that there'll be these libertarians who go, you know, the government subsidizes tobacco, and then they tax cigarettes. So how stupid is the government? And he goes, no, they get contributions from the tobacco industry, and then they get revenue from cigarette sales. They're not stupid. You're stupid for thinking they're stupid.
Yeah,
like that's the whole point. It's like, they're not stupid. This is a scheme. Oh yeah, what, these idiots, you know what I mean? It's like, do they not even know that the Federal Reserve creates bubbles? And you're like, yeah, but it also creates hundreds of billions of dollars in profits for big banks. So this is the point that you've made before and that I'm getting at, that you can be a libertarian, a very good libertarian, and be completely blue-pilled. And many times, not always, but many times, a blue-pilled libertarian is worse than someone who's red-pilled but holds some anti-liberty positions.
You can much easier talk to a red-pilled Marxist. Yes. Many of these Antifa, these Emma Goldman types, which I like non-ironically, Van Jones is a great example of this. Van Jones was a literal commie, and a lot of times he's on CNN, and he will be giving the commie roots come out, the unorthodox leftist perspective, where he's attacking corporate power within the Democratic Party, when he's saying, you can't say Obama was elected president twice and now all of a sudden we're all racist and that's why Trump's president. That narrative doesn't, and he gets a lot of heat for that.
Oh.
So he's a great example of what you were talking about, like somewhat red-pilled leftist.
Well, another great example is Jimmy Dore, who, I did his show and he was on my show this year. And you talked to Jimmy Dore, and look, he might be a leftist, but he is red-pilled as shit on the warfare state, on corporatism in general. So you talk to him right away and you're like, and one of the first things I said when we were talking about what the government should do, and I was like, well, Jimmy, as you know, the government is run by blood-soaked monsters who will slaughter children to maintain or expand power. Yeah. And he's like, look, absolutely, that is the truth. Now, Gary Johnson, on the other hand, called Hillary Clinton a fine public servant. Now, who can you have more of a conversation with out of those two people? I might agree with Gary Johnson on politics more than I do with Jimmy Dore on certain policy issues, but like, who can you have a really more honest, meaningful conversation with? Someone who realizes the nature of the warfare state, or somebody who thinks its biggest proponent is just like a really wonderful public servant. She works for you. All right, guys, let's take a quick second. I want to thank our sponsor for today's show, which is a new podcast that I came across that I think you guys are absolutely going to love. It's called A Neighbor's Choice, hosted by David Gernosky. David's show has been described as an apocalyptic Mr. Rogers for adults. David doesn't tell you what to think. He tells you how to think. He exposes politics by tracing its roots back to mythology and ritual. Every show provides the missing link between today's fake news and ancient myth. David's show is like a secret weapon in your back pocket that makes sense of the daily gaslighting of the corporate press in the name of its victims. David highlights how politics is just scapegoating through his own observations and through those of guests from the liberty movement like Ron Paul, John Beza, Peter Schiff, Jeff Deist, but also does deep dives with cultural figures like Jordan Peterson and Scott Adams. David dismantles fake news and offers futures that unleashes technology for the betterment of the human person. David also regularly features call-in interviews with prisoners serving life sentences for nonviolent crimes, shedding light into life on the inside. Plus, each week you'll hear solutions from scientists on the front lines of market innovations in nuclear fusion and researchers challenging the status quo of medicine. From newsmakers to innovators, David brings his neighbors on a mind-blowing journey. I think you guys are really going to dig this show. Check it out by subscribing to David Gernosky at Apple Podcasts. You can visit his website, aneighborschoice.com. For YouTubers, subscribe to his YouTube channel, youtube.com/David Gernosky. All right. Let's get back into the show.
Let's go full ANCOM. Let's do it. This past year, we have seen a systemic attack on the burning down and shuttering of small businesses that would have been inconceivable in 2019. And the entire time this was being cheered on by and urged as mandatory by corporate America. So this is one great example where the hard left analysis of corporate American outworks is right on the money. They, I mean, when they're literally being burnt down, all the news reports are saying, well, it's mostly peaceful. Yeah, if my the fire only burned down 93% of my store, I mean, you know, it's just like planting seeds. It'll just grow back.
Well, and it's also, it's a great point that you're making. And it's one of the biggest things that is underreported about this year is that really what this year has been, in effect, whether or not it's planned this way, but this year has been an assault on the middle class and a huge benefit to the corporate elite. I mean, these guys have had like the big banks are doing phenomenal. They got trillions in zero interest loans. Big corporations all over the place got bailouts, airlines, whole bunch of different companies got big bailouts. Amazon stock is through the roof. Social media stocks are doing great. All these guys are doing phenomenal. But the small businesses have been absolutely decimated. When I was on Ari Shafir, on mutual friend of ours, on his podcast, and he was just telling me one story, just one anecdotal story. Yeah, well, okay, you know, he's let's just say he's one of us, if you know what I mean. he's one of us. He might be three of us with that thing.
Yeah, I know. It's like an anteater.
It really, it's rough. So he was just telling one anecdotal story, but he's just this bike store that where he got his bike from. And that was like a couple blocks from him, and he knew the guy who owned it. And the guy got looted, and he didn't have insurance. And so he's just got ruined, just absolutely ruined. Now that doesn't happen to a big corporation. Like even if Bank of America gets a brick through the window, Bank of America's got their insurance taken care of. They've got, and also, you know, like
but
that's
Dave,
nothing.
No,
to
no,
them.
Let me interject. They don't have to have insurance because they have lobbyists.
Right.
So if things go bad for them and they didn't see it coming, all they have to do is call their man in Washington, and he's going to call Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer.
Yeah.
And Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer are going to say, oh, we can't have this giant company go under. Look how many jobs they provide. Here's free money.
Yeah.
So they don't even need to have insurance. Their insurance is their lobbyists and their corporate power and their access to lawmakers.
Yeah. And of course, on top of that, they are literally insured by the federal government.
Yes.
With the FDIC. And of course, they get the easy money from the Fed. So, yeah, I mean, it's like they don't have to worry about this. And so that gives you a whole new cynical perspective on why these big corporations might be just fine with the looting and the destruction of property. Now, one of the and there are some, I'll say, libertarians who I really like, who I do think are hopelessly blue-pilled. And so anyway, in this video, there was a clip of you, and it was a moment that I completely forgot about, but was one of my favorite moments in cable news ever. And it was when you, not the thing about the son of the teacher. That was,
oh, that's right.
Too.
I thought you were going.
I saw that one going viral again.
Yeah.
I don't know what inspired that to just all of a sudden start getting shared
again. I'll tell you what inspired it.
Please.
Someone tweeted out, goes, if you're having a rough time and things look bad, always remember Michael Malice went there.
That's so great. Oh, man. Okay, so that is a great one. If you don't know what we're referring to, go find it. That was a moment on Kennedy. This was a moment on Stossel, which was a great libertarian show that introduced a lot of people to some really important ideas. And I've always really liked John Stossel. What's funny about that?
I'll tell you what's funny. Because he was like the third or fourth guest I had on You're Welcome when I moved to Gas Digital from Compound Media. And I did a John Stossel impression to John Stossel. And I said, well, you think that the private sector can do better than the government? Schooling? And he's like, let me think about that. Yeah. Publishing, sure. Fashion? He's like, yeah. I go, well, if the private sector can do better than the government, why do we need government at all? And doing John Stossel to John Stossel was one of the highlights of my podcasting career, which isn't saying much because it's all garbage.
Well, you know, there's bright spots.
Like
now
in the garbage
then.
Dump.
every third or fourth week, you put on a pretty entertaining show.
You mean like Tom this week? Yeah.
That's right. There we go. So no, but the moment was, and I had completely forgotten about this. And he didn't even have the audio clip of it. He just played like the video, but I remembered the moment. But it was when you were on Stossel And John Stossel said to you something along the lines of, and this was blue pilled versus red pilled to me in a nutshell. Stossel said it was during 2016 during the Republican primary. And Stossel said something along the lines to you of, he goes like, he was like, well, I mean, they're all bad, but I mean, Bush is better than Trump. I mean, you know, at least he cut taxes in his state and he's not a protectionist. And the look on your face is just this pure, like, I don't even know how to, like, shock. It is shock and awe, no pun intended, that you're like, and you go, there is nothing worse that the government can do than start a war. It's, and then Stossel kind of seems to go like, that's a, like, it's almost like in Stossel's mind, he has to go, yeah, that could have unintended consequences on the marketplace. And you're like, right. And the slaughtering of children, like, that's a pretty bad part of a war also. But that kind of is the, like that's an example. And I remember John Stossel, and this pissed a lot of libertarians off, and he did not get it. But when the Edward Snowden revelations first came out,
yeah,
John Stossel said, I don't really see why this is such a big deal. I mean, I'm not a terrorist, so
oh, no, you can't. You're joking. You're joking.
No, no, this is what he said.
I have to believe, because I love John Stossel, that you are somehow misremembering. I need this, Dave. I need this. My blue pill. This is my blue pill. Dave is mixing him up. You're thinking about somebody else.
No, and I am going to force this red pill down your throat.
No.
Like a dog taking medicine. I'm just going to hold your mouth shut until you swallow it. This is what John Stossel said.
The KGB?
Said.
It's this, the American KGB?
Mm-hmm. But here is the essence of what the blue pill is, right? Is that even if you could believe, right? You could believe in a lot of different ways. You could believe that liberty is moral. There you go. Oh, it's a big one. That's a big pill. Take a tall glass of water with that one. So you could believe that you could believe that free markets are far more efficient than central planning and all of these things and be a libertarian. But if you generally believe that the corporate press is trying to deliver honest news to you, and they may get it wrong sometimes, and they have their own bias, so they don't exactly always guard against their bias, but they're trying to do honest journalism. And if you believe the CIA is really just in the business of preventing terrorism,
right,
and presidents get in there and they really mean well, but sometimes, you know, all of these policies have the best of intentions, but sometimes they go awry, that is truly blue-pilled. And so what John Stossel was basically saying there was that I accept as a given that, of course, they're spying on people to prevent terrorism. And so what's really the problem if they read my emails or they look at my metadata? I mean, I don't know. I'm not a terrorist. And the essence of being red-pilled is understanding that this is not what they claim it is, that actually they are doing all of these things for very nefarious reasons. And this is, you know, this is where you get comments like Gary Johnson, that Hillary Clinton's a wonderful public servant.
I had dinner once. This is one of those moments where you're just like, when you realize how removed you are from normalcy. He was a former spook. I think it was CIA, maybe it's FBI, but I'm 99% sure it was CIA. And, you know, he quit the organization because he said it was corrupt. And his conclusion is like it needed systemic reform. And I was asking him about how it operates and things like that. And he's like, one example is by law, it's illegal for me as a CIA operative to like spy on my ex-girlfriend. But what they do, he says, this is him talking. He goes, so what we do is I'd call my contact in France and say, hey, can you do surveillance on this person? And then they get back to me. So I'm not spying on her, but this is perfectly allowed. And he's like, you saw this kind of thing all the time. And it's like, this, you know, this needs to change. And I'm sitting there. And as someone who's like of Soviet descent, I was just like, I can't say what I thought the consequences for this should be. But the idea that the consequence is like, you know, you should be fired or like be reprimanded is so removed from what I think should happen to people like this. I don't even know where to start to tell you, because there's no possibility that you're doing something like this. First of all, it's depraved to use your power to spy on your ex. Okay. Then, so you can't even pretend you're doing the wrong. Like if I was at your house and I was just like started reading your, like opening up envelopes and like reading letters to you and we're pals, that's really bad. but if there's like a vault and like I call Lewis and I'm like, hey, do you know the number to Dave's vault? And Lewis is like, of course, you know, I got sticky fingers. You know, sure. And then I'm opening it up. There's no possibility, I think, that I am doing something excusable or acceptable.
Yeah.
So when someone, and Rand talks about this, she goes, if someone knowingly and consciously does evil, she talks about black and white versus gray, you know, like how principles are black and white, but everyone is a little bit of gray. But she goes, if someone knowingly and consciously does evil, they're as black as it gets.
Yeah.
Like it's just, and I completely, completely agree with her.
Absolutely. 100%. All right, guys, let's take a quick second. I want to thank our awesome sponsor for today's show, which is Blue Chew. If you like sex, you're going to love Blue Chew. BlueChew.com offers men a performance enhancement for the bedroom. At BlueChew.com, you can get the first chewables with the same active ingredient as Viagra and Cialis. Now, chewables can work faster than pills, up to twice as fast. And the chewables from BlueChew.com can be taken on a full or empty stomach. The online physician consultant is free, so it's cheaper than those other two. It only takes a few minutes to connect with a BlueChew.com affiliated physician. And if you qualify, you get prescribed online quickly. So there's no in-person doctor visit, no awkward conversation, no waiting in line at a pharmacy. It ships directly to your door in discreet packaging. The chewables from BlueChew.com are prescribed online by a doctor and made in the USA. Blue Chew gives you the confidence in the bedroom every time. You and your partner will love it. And here's a great deal for you guys. If you go to BlueChew.com, you'll get your first order for free when you use the promo code PROBLEM. You just pay $5 shipping, but the order is free. That's BlueChew.com, BlueChew.com, promo code PROBLEM. All right, let's get back into the show. I remember hearing Buck Sexton, who I like very much. I enjoy. I know you've had him on and stuff. And
you like Buck Sexton?
Love some good Buck Sexton. I've done shows with him before. He's a really nice guy, really funny guy, and very smart. But I remember he's an ex-CIA guy.
Yeah.
And one of the things he said that was really, so he was very good at breaking down the bullshit of Russia Gate, and the abuse of powers of the FBI and the CIA in the process of creating that bullshit. And I remember listening to him once. I listened to him a few different times comment on it. And one time he commented on it, and so I agreed with everything he said. Literally everything was spot on. And then the final thing he said was, he goes, you know, the worst part about all of this is that this is going to seriously undermine the credibility of these institutions. And I remember thinking, it was so interesting that I agreed with 100% of what he was saying. And my conclusion is the precise opposite, that actually that is the only silver lining in all of this. It is absolutely the best part of all of this, that this could undermine credibility in these institutions. Now that comment isn't about the red pill, blue pill thing, but one big indication of the difference between a blue pilled libertarian and a red pilled libertarian is if they ever talk about it being a problem that institutions' credibility is undermined.
Exactly. Yes.
That is a real sign that they are just taking the whole cathedral at its word, that of course it would be a bad thing if this whole thing was undermined. And you know, like I said, and I don't mean to pick on him, because I like Justin Amash very much. I really do. I like him. I think he's one of the best congressmen in the history of the country, which, okay, that's not saying much, but he's a good congressman, about as good as you can be. Me and him messaged back and forth recently. We were very friendly, and he said some really nice things, and I really like the guy. But listening to him out there talking about how dangerous it is that Donald Trump is undermining people's confidence in who actually got elected, just to me reeks of the smell of a blue pill. The blue pill has an odor. The red pill is odorless.
Let's talk another one. This just happened in the last 24 hours as we record. There, and this is something I'm very hopeful about, and I thought was absolutely impossible. One thing I talk about in my book, and I've mentioned in the past, is my opinion, the way gay rights got over wasn't a lot of this activism. It was just people coming out. Call it like the ambassador program. It's really, really hard to be that level of homophobic to the point of like this should be a felony if it's someone's uncle or your coworker or your neighbor. And you could still be like, you could still be homophobic in the sense that I think it's wrong, I think it's immoral, I think it's gross, but you look at the guy, you're like, okay, the idea that I wish harm on this person, it gets harder and harder. Same thing with racism or sexism. Like, once you start meeting any counterfactuals, you could still be maybe prejudiced, but in terms of like having this blanket contempt for a population, it's like, wait a minute, this is the guy down the street, he's a jerk, but I'm a jerk. Like, I mean, I'm not really going to just condemn him and his whole family and wish harm on them. And the opposite of that is the cops. So conservatives, when you bring up the cops, like bring up minorities for progressives, like they can't wait to take that bullet and be like, oh yeah, this is my chance to defend this group. They can do no wrong. Well, sure, they do wrong sometimes. And why are you bringing it up? It's out of proportion, blah, blah, blah. And there was a bar on Staten Island and they were like a speakeasy, you know, during this. They had a sting and they arrested the owner for trespassing in his own bar. The cops did. And obviously everything is marginal. It's not binary. Like, just like when you're buying a car, like everyone will buy a car for a dollar. Fewer people buy for $1,000, fewer at 10. At a certain point, only one guy is going to buy it. It's going to take a lot for people who are conservatives to be like, oh, I was wrong about the cops.
Yeah.
But things like this, you don't have to have me and you with our anti-cop propaganda. You could look at this video and be like, I want you to tell me that these are all good cops doing the right thing. And it is very hard for a lot of these boomer cons to look at this footage and be like, okay, I have no problem with this, and I'm cheering them on. It's very, very hard for them.
Yeah, you know, it's been one of the things that's been discussed in broader libertarian spaces, and in the conspiracy theory world, like on Alex Jones type, you know, shows and things like that. For a long time, I mean, going back, you know, as far as I was paying attention to it, back to like 2008, 2009. One of the things that people talked about with the real hardcore Alex Jones fans who really believed like we were moving toward a one world government and that there were FEMA camps being set up for American citizens to be thrown into. One of the questions that'd be asked a lot was they would go like, is there any point where the cops wouldn't follow these orders? What if the military was ordered to occupy American cities and start rounding people up? Would they do it? Would any of them say, no, I took an oath to the Constitution, you know, and this year, we've had a lot of, you know, it's almost been a little bit of a trial run. And there have, by the way, to give credit, there have been some bright spots. There were, I think, 5 or 6 different sheriff departments in New York who said, we will not enforce Cuomo's Thanksgiving rules. Like, no, I'm sorry. I'm not enforcing how far away from you your grandmother is in your home. I'm not doing that. And that's really something. I don't mean to downplay that. But overall in 2020, what we have seen is that cops really will enforce quite a bit. I mean, they will enforce arresting someone for being at a religious service. They will come and harass people because there were rumors that your kid was on a play date. Yeah. I mean, and that in itself is quite a red pill. And it's also one of the reasons why I was so furious about the fucking rioting that went on all summer long. Because it's like right in the middle of this moment when right wingers are getting red pilled on the cops, these fucking riots are like the worst thing that can happen for that progression. Because then right wingers look at riots and all it takes is like one riot and to look at that and go like, yep, exactly. That's why I support the cops. Let me get right back into my comfortable blue pilled space. Because yeah, of course, what else? What the hell is if they're between us and that, then I take them.
And the right to say that if that's the choice.
Understandably. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think that as I was saying before with about Jimmy Dore, like to me, the most important one, if there was one area to be red pilled on, would be on the warfare state. And that goes hand in hand with the media being red pilled on the fact that the fucking media will sell mass murder campaigns and that private companies are raking in billions of dollars of profits for this. And the result of this is, you know, the worst thing in the world, you know, human beings being slaughtered.
I think we're in a good position in this regard. In 2016, no one, including his supporters, had any idea what a Trump administration would look like. No clue. The left had all these scenarios. The right had all these scenarios. I remember sitting down with Molly Hemingway, and I was wrong, but because she was like worried about it. I go, don't you think he's going to be like Governor Schwarzenegger? Like, I can see that happening very easily. He's running his mouth and he just governs this as kind of like lefty Republican. And it's just, he's like a disaster. She's like, yeah, you know, we've had that kind of thing before. Everyone knows what a Biden administration is going to look like. But that also means that the opposition is getting their ducks in a row before he's even sworn in, which we did not have with Obama, because Obama had enormous public support. He had enormous institutional support. He was new. He was young. He was trying to say, we're going to do things differently. The system, in his defense, the system itself doesn't really allow much innovation, because you still have to deal with the Congress where everyone's been there for decades. You still got to deal with the House and whatever, even with his super majorities. But I've already started tweeting, Biden wants to kill your children, because when the war starts, and the next one I have queued up, and this is one that's, but when you say something that's very disturbing, it puts them on their heels. And if you're talking about war, I want them to be on their heels as much as possible. This has to be nipped in the bud. Joe Biden buried his sons, and now he's comfortable burying yours. So it's a very low blow, and I don't give a damn. Because as a New Yorker, I'm the target. We go in the Middle East and have this adventurism. We know what happens. Ron Paul said this to Giuliani's face. There's going to be blowback. It's going to cause. You don't get to go to another country, kill people, and have them be like, well, they are the good guys. So, you know, what am I? Some people are going to do something, to quote Ilhan Omar. So, and here's the other thing that I find really sick. Let's take him at face value and assume that he genuinely thinks that voting for the Iraq war was a mistake. He's like, man, I really made that wrong call, right? And I know people, I don't want to mention-
It's possible. Yeah. He did kill his son.
Yeah.
I mean, his son died because of the fucking cancer that he got over in the Iraq war, which is like a well-documented thing. He literally is responsible for Bo's death,
but
the good
on.
Son.
Yeah, but here's the other thing. You would think if that's the case, like if you're an alcoholic, I'm going to take steps to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Yeah. Like if I'm a cook and my chicken got someone sick, it's like, all right, we got to look at this process because there's no way this can happen again. But if you look at his staffing decisions, he's not staffing in that regard. So this is all crocodile tears, and he needs to be hit as hard as quickly as possible on this issue. And he's going to fold like a slinky.
Yes. No, look, the example that I use most of the time is Walter Jones, who's passed away now. But he was a congressman who voted for the war in Iraq and truly regretted it. And he every day would send letters to family members of soldiers who were killed or wounded in that war. And he subsequently voted against every single military intervention after that. That's kind of the type of sign that someone actually regrets. Like, if you do that, now I can start taking you seriously. Or even look, someone like Tucker Carlson, who supported the war in Iraq, went there, I believe, in like 2004, turned on the whole thing, and has subsequently railed against every single military campaign afterward. People like that I can start to believe. When you see Joe Biden stacking his cabinet with the same old war hawks, I don't buy for a second that that isn't the direction that his administration is going to go, or at least would like to go. All right, guys, this is for fans of the show who are over 21. I've got something you're going to love, and that's HempireDirect.com. Why are you going to love this? Well, they can legally sell you Delta H THC in 42 states. And why are you going to love Delta 8? Because it gets you high, really high. Hempire Direct offers Delta 8 in vape cartridges, gummies, distillate, soft gels, and tinctures. It's all high quality, lab test verified, and they have incredible prices. Now, if you've never heard of Delta 8 THC, remember when you had never heard of CBD, but then you gave you some and you loved it? Like CBD, Delta 8 is naturally occurring in hemp and can be sold legally in 42 states, but unlike CBD, D8 does get you high. So go to HempireDirect.com. That's HempireDirect.com, or download the Hempire Direct app in the episode description. And if you use the promo code GAS50, you're going to get 50% off your first order. That's right. Half off your first order with the promo code GAS50. It's HempireDirect.com, or download the Hempire Direct app and use the promo code GAS50. HempireDirect.com. back to the red pill, blue pill thing. It makes me wonder, a lot of these, like, you know, blue pilled libertarians who voted for Biden because they thought Trump was so bad. You're like, how do you feel when you see him stacking his cabinet with all of these war hawks? Do you feel like, well, at least he's not as racist, even though he wrote the crime bill and is a racist and has said just as many racist fucking things? Like, do you, but is that okay? Does that make you feel better? You know, the red pilled versus blue pilled libertarians, I think, was a big dividing line in how Donald Trump was perceived by people in this space, because the blue-pilled libertarians just right away saw, like, oh, he's horrible and he's unpresidential, and we've been told by the whole, you know, cathedral that that's not what you're supposed to be as a president. And look, and they'd obsessively point out to you that he's anti-libertarian on this policy, that policy, as if you're like, yeah, of course. Obviously, we all know he's not a libertarian. But the red-pilled libertarians, like myself, who didn't ever support Donald Trump, enjoyed a lot of the moment of Donald Trump, enjoyed the fact that he was just dunking on the corporate press every day, that he was exposing the deep state, that he was undermining trust in all of these institutions. I thought this was wonderful.
I think I understand what's going on, and I think it's a little bit of evolutionary psychology going on. Here's their choices. Under the status quo, under the cathedral, there's an episode of The Simpsons when Homer became the voice of Poochie, right? You have Itchy and Scratchy, which are the cat and mouse. They always fight. Uh-huh. And they added Poochie to the cartoon, and Homer was his voice. And they're having a meeting of all the writers, and Homer comes in and he goes, here's what I think we should have. Like, if Poochie's not there, the other character should be like, where's Poochie? And he just goes to this list. And the guy who's running the show is like, great. Leave that on the floor. And like, get out and we'll look at it later. And he's like, over here, good. He's like, yeah, that's great. Just goodbye. For them, they would rather be that person in the cathedral, which is you have the Republican establishment, the Mitch McConnells, and then you have the Democrats, the Chuck Schumers, but also like Stephen Colbert and Bill Maher. And every so often they'll trot out a libertarian from like Reason or Cato, and he'll get up with his piece of paper and he was like, here's what I think. Blah, 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 blah. Gold standard, open borders, da, da, da. Great. Cool. Leave the piece of, yeah. And they will give you the appearance of saying your piece. You're not going to do anything. You will have no power, but you will be heard in a sense that you'll give in a platform for 5 minutes. Then they could go back to cutting their deals, right? So in that scenario, they have a measure of credibility and they're on the stage to some extent, but they have no power. The alternative, like the red-pilled world, no one's listening to them. No one is talking to them. Not the hard left, not the Republicans, not the new right, not the red-pilled libertarians. No one cares at all about Jo Jorgensen and what she has to say. There's nobody other than themselves. Yeah. And that's why hashtag let her speak is like, if you have to ask to be let to speak, there's your problem. The way to do it is to, and I'm using this word force loosely, is to be enough of a presence that they have no option but to have you up on that stage. So that is the two scenarios. You guys want to be Poochie? Go ahead. The rest of us want to, you know, burn down the Itchy and Scratchy factory.
Yeah. No, that's a really, really perfect way to put it. It's, you know, there's Rothbard, you know, talked about this quite a bit, and it's the reason why the Mises Institute is in Auburn. And Jeff Dice talked about this a lot. He goes, if you want to have a libertarian institute, it should not be in Washington, D.C. or in New York. Like, just get out of there. What do you need to be there? You don't need to be at their parties. You don't need to be making friends with these people. You're here to bring this thing down. You're not there to try to get in. And as you said, get a seat at the table, which is not even a seat at the table. It's a seat at the kids' table. And, you know, it couldn't be less than useless to occupy.
And I remember I was a Cato intern in 97. And this is right after the Republicans took over Congress for the first time in 40 years in 94. And there was a lot of hope that they were really going to take an axe to the federal government. Mm-hmm. And there was lots of reasons to believe it. You know, this was a major change of 40 years. They were talking the talk. They were forcing budget concessions, certainly from what the projections had been earlier. And they had something called the Cato Handbook for Congress, right? And what Cato did, it was like a phone book kind of thing, spiral bound. I still have mine, I think. They went through and they said, here are like relatively painless cuts that you could make to the budget immediately that like you should be able to get through just with your votes and blah, 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 blah. Like, so, like, we'll do the work for you. And David Bowes, who was executive vice president of Cato, now I think that was his title at the time. You could look this up. The interview is still on the internet. He gave an interview and he said, "We regard this as like pornography for Republican staffers," meaning they look at it, they read it, they get excited, but it's never going to happen. And in retrospect, I'm thinking, by your own admission, your strategy is something that will never happen. How is that at all strategic? Like, for me, for I think almost to be pedantic, the definition of the word strategy is, what is the conceivable path, if not to victory, but to improvement?
To something.
To something. If it's like, I'm going to expend a lot of energy, and it was very smart, very well done. They put a lot of effort into it, but it's like, and now just take it and put it in the garbage. I still can't wrap my head around the thought process that did that, other than, you know, and this is not nothing. You can point to your donors and say, okay, this is what we're doing with your money.
Yeah. You know, when you get into this mentality, there were two tweets that I saw recently that I thought really stuck out to me. And one of them was by the Libertarian Party. I was very critical of them for this. So they had a tweet and they said something along the lines of, it started good. The first two sentences were good. The first two sentences were something like, no government can tell you that you're not essential. They don't have a, you know, no government can tell you, you know, that you shouldn't, you know, shut down your business or something like that. However, wearing masks and social distancing, avoiding crowds are all very good ideas. And I was like, just God, this is awful messaging.
Here's the
and then
tweet.
There were some.
You want me to read it?
Yes, please.
You are essential. No virus can change that, and no government has the right to tell you otherwise while you're threatening your ability to earn a living, while threatening your ability to earn a living or live your life. Also, it's a really good idea to wear a mask, avoid crowds, and consider others during a pandemic.
Now, I did get some pushback from people when I was critical of this, and they're like, but what's the problem with that message? I mean, that's the libertarian thing, right? Like, we don't want the government to force you to do it, but, you know, we think you should voluntarily do it, and it's still a pretty good thing. It's about personal responsibility, but not being forced by the government. And then I contrasted that with a different tweet written by one Michael Malice. And your tweet, which I retweeted because it was fantastic. Oh yeah, he's a real douche, but he's bright and he's really good on Twitter. But yeah, douche. You don't want to grab a beer with him. But your tweet was the one about being locked in your home. Do you remember what you said?
No.
You said being locked in your home. I should have this in front of me. But it was something along the lines of being locked in your home is not the beginning of a discussion.
Oh, it's a declaration. Yeah, yeah. Being told I intend to keep you captive in your own home is not the beginning of discussion. It's a declaration of war.
Yes. Now, that is the difference between the way a blue-pilled libertarian and a red-pilled libertarian thinks. I'm not saying that maybe it's not a good idea to wear a mask. I think wearing a mask in certain situations is a good idea. I think if you're around someone who's been exposed and you're inside and you're around them for more than 15 minutes to a half hour, something like that, yeah, that's probably a good idea to have a mask on. And that's maybe social distancing in certain situations is a good idea. I'm not saying it's not. The point is that the government is literally instituting totalitarianism. They are telling you who you can have in your home, whether you can go to work. I'm not exaggerating. Governor Newsom's guidelines had instructions about how one of your family members can use the bathroom, you can play.
No, it said the music can't be too loud, yeah.
Yes. I mean, this is really the government in 2020 instituted totalitarian rules like they never have before.
How come when Governor Newsom says you can't play loud music, no one's calling him out for being racist? Because I know that's what he means. You get Lewis on that phone. He's talking about you, Lewis.
This is clearly an attack on the Puerto Rican community who only know loud music. Loud music is their form of parenting. They don't have parents. They just have loud music. And you're going to take that from them? Okay. Good luck. Good luck, Gavin.
Sorry I interrupted your tear.
this is going on, and when you're fighting back and then undermining your own message by kind of going, well, you know, some of it is a really good idea though. And then the obvious like conclusion from that is like, well, if it's a good idea, I mean, maybe we just mandate it. I mean, this is a matter of life and death. So it's like, no, your role here is to fight for liberty. And you need a message that points out how truly awful these government policies are. And don't give them the benefit of the doubt that, I mean, of course, all of these things really do help, blah, blah, blah. And then it's just like, just no understanding of how to message. Like how to actually say something that someone might hear and go, fuck yeah, that's right. Good for them for having some courage.
This is marketing 101. You have to have a competitive advantage, right? So if the Democrats are going to be arguing for diversity, right? The Republicans to say we also have diversity, well, then that's a wash. You have to compete with them on some metric. So if these other people are saying you should do X and you say, I also think you should do X. Why am I going with you when they've got the numbers? It makes no sense as a strategy, even if you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, that's right. And it's very, it's...
And wait, here's my other tweet. Greg Gutfeld read this on Fox.
Oh, yeah, I saw this. Read it.
It was, tyranny is when the population is imprisoned. Liberty is when the politicians are.
Yeah.
Matt Walsh, who's from the Daily Wire, I believe, still. Hardcore social conservative, he's talking about sending governors to Gitmo now. So that is how, in my opinion, you should be moving the national conversation, as opposed to we're all in this together. Well, then why am I voting third party? What are you bringing to the table?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And if you're going to go down the path of being like if you're going to say, well, wearing masks is a really good idea, you know? So you're saying, well, wearing masks will really help mitigate the virus. All right. But then maybe we should mandate that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, why, if you're giving them that, I heard one libertarian who said something where they go like, look, like I think that like the lockdowns shouldn't be forced, but like you really can kill your grandmother if you don't abide by them. So it's like a good idea to do it voluntarily. And you're like, oh, well, if all that's true, wouldn't the average person look at that and say, yeah, then let's just force them.
Shouldn't condom use among high-risk populations be the law? We're talking about death. I mean, not anymore because AIDS has been largely mitigated, but back in the day.
I was also very critical of a different Libertarian Party tweet on Thanksgiving. I don't know if you saw that, but they tweeted out a thing about how their Thanksgiving message was that the original Thanksgiving was a celebration of undocumented workers or undocumented immigrants coming to America. And you're just like, dude, I was like, the government is banning Thanksgiving. Do you really need to search for what the libertarian message is here?
Isn't the message then that those undocumented immigrants are going to slaughter your people and destroy your culture?
Yes, I mean—
And take it as their own?
If you were making an open borders argument, there couldn't be a worse example. There couldn't be a worse example.
The Central and South Americans, that's the worst example. Where they had the disease and they were slaughtered.
But
that's the worst one.
Yes.
But
yeah,
that one's
pretty bad. But if you look around at the pilgrims coming over to the Native Americans and you go, so what are the Native Americans doing now? And you're like, they're on reservations. Their culture has been destroyed. Their land's been taken. Their people were killed. They could have used some border patrol, probably.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it is very hard watching watching the LP message is. I mean, it's funny at times, but it's pretty frustrating.
Wait, let me ask you this. Someone put in my locals group that you intend to take over the Libertarian. You made a declaration that you're going to take over the Libertarian Party.
Yes.
Well, I mean, what did you just joke? What did you mean by that?
No, I'm serious.
Was that a joke? No, but I mean, that's your joking face. Now you're triggering my autism.
The Mises caucus plan is to become the dominant force.
Oh, okay. That's what you mean. Okay.
And that's more or less what I mean by that.
Okay.
We're going to be the dominant force in the party and we're going to control, do our best to control the messaging, the candidates and things like that. It's a libertarian takeover of the Libertarian Party.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay.
And we got some exciting plans, some tricks up our sleeves.
Oh,
okay. I'll talk to you about it at a later time.
Okay. I don't like tricks.
You don't. Now you're triggering.
I got you for a second. You're like, wait a minute. Wait. Oh,
we're both just triggering each other's autism in this episode. It's a lot of fun. It's a good time. Anyway, I do think, I am really excited about, the prospects of the manner in which Donald Trump is leaving the White House.
Oh, yeah.
And I really do think are entering a new time where there's never been anything quite like this before in the history of this country, where you have a president who got 70 plus million votes, is flat out saying on his way out, I was robbed. This was massive fraud. This guy, Joe Biden, is not the true legitimate president. I don't think Donald Trump is ever going to concede. I don't think he's going to be at the inauguration. He will leave. He's not leave the White House. But what you're going to be left there with is a situation where tens of millions of Americans not only don't like the president, do not believe he is actually their president.
We've had that for 4 years. Hashtag not my president.
Sure, sure, but not quite to the same level.
Right, I agree with you. Obama wasn't saying it.
There's a difference. Yes, and even
I'm agreeing with you. Obama wasn't saying not my president. Yeah,
sure, sure. But even Hillary Clinton, who did insist that it was stolen from her, she conceded. She called Donald Trump. She said, you know, you're the president now. You beat me in this. On some level, she conceded. She did not do what Donald Trump is doing, you know, which is a really different thing. And I got to say, and maybe this goes to the red pill, blue pill thing, I don't understand how any red pilled libertarian could not see it as a good thing that a bunch of people don't believe the system is legitimate. Isn't that our entire point, that the system is illegitimate?
I think they're... No, I don't think they think that. They think the system is corrupt and fixable.
Right.
And it's like, when has it not been corrupt? Like, if something's been rotten for 200 years, at a certain point, this is the Rothbard point. It's like, what's utopian? Like anarchism or your belief after 200 and plus years of data that this constitution, which was written by politicians, interpreted by politicians, is going to restrain politicians in their power. Which of these is more utopian? Like, we have the receipts.
Yeah, I actually think that, and I've said this before, but I think that I think minarchism is perhaps the most utopian philosophy that's out there. It might be more utopian than true communism. It rivals communism in terms of how utopian it is.
Because
the idea that there will be a government, we will have a power structure called the government that has a legal monopoly on the legal right to initiate violence against people, yet it will control its own power and remain small. What could be more utopian than that?
It's also this idea. There's someone on my Twitter yesterday who was like, you know, any of these governors or mayors who violate these stay-at-home laws should be kicked out of office immediately. And I don't disagree, but it's like, by whom? Like, who is enforcing these checks that you want to have happen? Then they're like, well, you know, this is what happens. We keep voting in the same people. New York City has term limits. And now our mayor is a Sandinista. So term limits is a great example. This was a strategy. Let's try this out. See if it works. It was new. It was untested. It went wide. And it turns out it did not actually have the effect that we thought. But it was a change in policy as opposed to, well, if we keep sending Congress a handbook for 30 years, at some point they're going to listen to us and cut the budget.
That's right. Here's how bad the idea of writing in checks and balances for government, you know, works in reality. Okay. So one of the checks on the power of the federal government under the Constitution was that the states appoint the senators.
Yes.
So that's something that actually checks the power of the federal government and gives more power to the state governments. So what'd they do? Let's go. Nope. We're not going to do that anymore. They literally just changed the rule. So if they want to take more power and something is actually an effective check, they'll simply change the rule and go, nope, now we're voting for him.
Yeah, it's almost embarrassing to see. Here's the other thing. The argument is, if everyone just listened to the Constitution as it's written, then we wouldn't be in this mess. And it's like, well, in that case, what do you need the Constitution for?
Yeah.
If me and you and all agree that the only thing we're going to have is a night watchman state, of what relevance is what this piece of paper 20 years ago? We can make that agreement today, right now, and that paper adds nothing. It's completely superfluous. So even your best argument for the Constitution is, well, if we all agreed to it, it would work. Well, that's the case for anything. If we all agreed to a commune, it would work on a small scale.
No, I was arguing with someone on Twitter the other day about lockdowns, and they said, well, the lockdowns would have worked if people complied with them. And you're like, yeah, but if you have a proposal that only works with 100% compliance, which you're never going to get, then that's a pretty shitty proposal.
Okay,
so what's going to make people comply if they didn't the first time? Why is it going to be better off going around the second time? All right, we are just about, I think, at the end of our time for this episode. I think we got it. A few little technical glitches, but we banged it out. I always enjoy talking with you, my brother, and I look forward to being on your show in a couple weeks.
Yes, talk soon.
Next. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Peace.